Welcome to episode number 13 of ESPN's Number One Challenge Podcast. I'm Billy Gill. I'm joined by Chunky Dog, Mr. Krabs, and Elas. As always, we have a huge guest this week. We have The Miz joining us.
Two-time challenge champ. Obviously, a lot of people know him. He's a WWE superstar. We're excited about the two-time champ part. The guy's got one of the best competition records in the history of the show. So he's like one of the old-school founders of this game that we love so much.
His career was short on the challenge, but maybe the most dominant ever.
To be honest with you, I thought that Bananas was going to be as big as we could get because CT obviously is a dream guest, but I don't think that we're going to get CT. CT seems to be a private guy. It's hard to track him down. So I thought that Bananas was kind of the peak.
No.
You know who loves CT is Elas. And so what better segue could we do to get her opening thoughts for this episode?
Ooh.
I didn't think this was going to be a real thing for a second week in a row.
Is it second or third?
If it's third, I feel very unprepared.
I feel like it's just about to take hold. We're getting so close.
Hashtag grow the show.
That's my opening thought. You took the words right out of my mouth.
All right. So should we recap this week's episode?
Absolutely. I think we have to start with an alert. Night challenge alert.
Ooh.
DJ sounded the alarm. And he brought everyone out for a night challenge. The challenge was absolutely meaningless. They were basically running back and forth throughout the night, putting weights into bins. And since there are only two guys without red skulls and one female competitor without red skulls, most of the people didn't try. We saw Anissa sort of loafing. We saw Bananas loafing. We saw a lot of people at the end not even want to pick up their barrel.
Do we think Kyle missed it on purpose or on accident?
I think on purpose. I think he was going for the house vote. Like once he saw how full his barrel was, it was time to go full Sam Hinkie and tank it.
Yeah. Hmm. I think that it was interesting. So just I guess everyone who's at this point has seen it, but yeah, there was, after they ran back and forth and picked up debris and put it in these barrels, every barrel had a name assigned to it. And then the person who had the most debris in it obviously had the heaviest thing to lift, and they had to hold it up for as long as they could to win the game. So the obvious favorites there were Festy, first and foremost, and that set up sort of an interesting exchange between Festy, Josh, and Corey as to who would win.
I got a bone to pick with Corey here.
Okay.
His vitriol and his anger towards Festy and towards Josh made absolutely no sense. Being in the tribunal meant nothing for him. He had his skull. He knew that the two skullless people were going to go into elimination against each other, except, can I give you a conspiracy theory alert?
Sure.
Conspiracy theory alert. Corey had a plan to put Bananas into purgatory.
Wow.
And that's why he was going to not put Josh in or Kyle, and he was going to try and make a big move on Bananas. Because there's no reason he would be so mad unless he wanted to have a power play when he had that power, because it changed nothing for his game.
For those of you who didn't watch the episode and are still listening, what happened was, Fessy is a monster, obviously. He is a beast. And he promised Josh that if Josh let go, he'd be good and he'd bring him into the tribunal. Now, the tribunal, as you may or may not know, well, maybe you wouldn't, because every week there's a different number of people in there. But the tribunal this week had three people in it. So Fessy promised Josh that he would bring him into the tribunal if Josh just let go, told him he was good. He then immediately turned to Corey and promised him the exact same thing. So clearly, when there's going to be a winner on the women's end, and it's going to be him as a winner, he can't bring both of them in. So he also promised Corey that thing. Corey then let go. Jenny won. So Jenny's in and Fessy is in. And then he has to pick one of the people to come in. And they ended up selecting Josh. And Corey lost his mind because he really wanted to be in the tribunal for some reason.
That was important information that I did not give the listeners, as I just that went directly into my conspiracy theory about the episode.
Well, that's the thing about conspiracy theory alerts. You know, you never know when they're going to come, and you just got to get to them when they get there.
Yeah, that was – I think there's a funny observation in there where Josh obviously was very upset once again that he was not, you know, included in that initial deal that was cut where Fessy, as Billy said, Fessy promised him, then turned around and promised Corey. I thought it was funny where we started the episode – once again, with Josh talking about, yo, I need to get my red skull, bro. I've been thinking, I'm obsessing about it. Got to get my red skull, bro. Like, I love Josh so much for who he is, and obviously we loved having him on the show, but the guy just, you know, I don't know what to say about it, really.
I feel like Fessy's move was a big brother kind of move. I feel like those sort of deals are very popular in Big Brother, But if you're going to make the deal verbally in front of so many people, you can't promise the same unattainable thing to two people, because I feel like you lose some trustworthiness there.
Within seconds, in front of both of them. He didn't stab anyone in the back because he did it right in front of them.
He stabbed them in the front.
And then blame Jenny for doing the stabbing also. He's like, oh, I tried. I don't control that.
Also, I don't really know what Jenny has against Corey. And I also don't know why Corey was so upset, as, you know, Kravitz, you were kind of talking about. It really made no sense unless he wanted to pull that power play against Bananas. But in terms of the guys who were going in, it was similar to the women's deal last week. We knew the whole time he was going in, it was going to be Kyle and Josh no matter what.
There had to be something more to it, because even during the challenge, we got an interview moment where Corey goes, I don't know where I stand with Bananas, so I'm going to start dumping stuff in his barrel. And that made me think that secretly they were going to go after him, and that's why he wanted the power. Because conceivably, had it even been Bananas versus Kyle, or Bananas versus Josh, or Bananas versus someone else, even if Fessy had gone down there and beaten himself, regardless, it was going to knock out someone in Bananas' alliance, which was going to go against Corey. And I think that was his power play, which got foiled by Fessy secretly having too much integrity and going along with what Jenny wanted.
I have a prediction alert.
Prediction alert.
We've been predicting Hall Brawls being next week all season long. We know now for a fact next week there is a Hall Brawl, right? I think what we were seeing this week in the Corey versus Jenny situation is a little foreshadowing and a little laying the foundation for next week. And I'll tell you why. Because Corey brought up multiple times that he feels like he had been wronged by Jenny. And our prediction so far has been, we think that going into the Hall Brawl, it's going to be a Jenny D Hall Brawl. Now, how does Jenny get in there? I think what may happen, prediction alert, I think that Corey is going to take power next week and he is going to put Jenny in there against D.
Oh, that would just be tremendous. I mean, look at these MTV editors just weaving a rich tapestry like that, just using two episodes to set up just the smallest beef between Corey and Jenny to bring us there, to bring us to the climax of the season where we see Jenny have vengeance from her Hall Brawl failures and absolutely demolish D before the final.
Yeah, if there's one thing that Mr. Krabs loves, it is rich tapestries. So kudos to the MTV editors. If we do indeed end up in this place that you're talking about, the Jenny D Hall Brawl, which would be amazing given the way the season's played out, I wonder how D is going to get there, like if it's through a house vote or being selected by the tribunal, and I wonder how much of that we're going to see, because even taking it back to some of the stuff with Corey this week and the Fessy thing, in my mind, I was watching this and saying that's not really a big deal, but then you're thinking about it in the context of D where, well, they must not have big storylines to play out through, or they can't show those storylines, right? So maybe that's why we're getting all this odd sort of what feels like filler, because it's a lesser storyline, doesn't matter, but now we have to see it because the D storyline cannot be shown.
I was wondering that same thing. I wondered if they didn't show something because she may have been involved in some sort of play behind the scenes. If she does get thrown in next week, it's really hard watching these episodes knowing where people stand with her because they're just not including any of her storylines. So if she gets thrown in next week like we thought that she would earlier in the season and we haven't kind of veered away from just because of how things were going, I wonder how they're going to explain to us why it is that she's getting thrown in, because we haven't heard or seen from her in weeks aside from just like group shots.
Absolutely. We know that there are context clues that she has to be livid against Rogan, who she had her shower time hanky-panky with and then turned on her and sent her into elimination. Bananas and Jenny, who plotted that with Rogan to throw her in. So we know that she has probably been in the house trying to get them all knocked out of the game. So yeah, I think you're right. I think we'll have to have a little bit more context of why and who put her in that back into purgatory.
So the house nominations were pretty straightforward, right? It was just
chalk.
Bailey put her name up, Kyle put his name up. And then one half of the tribunal selections was pretty easy. And Josh was telling everyone, hey, it was Nelson and Rogan were the male tribunal nominations. And while they seemed to be mildly irritated, largely they were joking. They were good natured about it. They knew Josh was going to go in. The women's side was a little more tricky. And Mr. Krabs, I'll spin it back over to you to continue our storyline.
It came down to Melissa and Anissa. And man, poor Anissa. Just like Nani has a point every single year where she gets knocked out before the final, the sort of men in the house ganged up and decided that they didn't want to run a final with Anissa. They thought her endurance wasn't at the point where if it became a partner final, she could help a team out. And they decided to pick on her. And Melissa basically was like, I know Anissa's cool, but does cool win you $1 million?
There were a bunch of one-liners in last night's episode that were good. Also, we had another very nice moment from our friend Nelson. Well, I guess he's not our friend because we don't really know him at all.
Soon to be friend.
Whoa. Spoiler alert? Prediction alert?
Prediction alert. That's a prediction alert from Mr. Krabs.
Wow.
So Nelson's soon to be our friend.
Nelson, I think, said when they were all kind of just trashing Anissa, he said, hey, listen, when I get to the final, I want to have experience on my side trying to defend Anissa. Nelson, 2 weeks in a row with nice things to say, huh?
Nelly T. I like it.
Yeah.
He's really transformed into a really sweet guy.
I mean, he started off on such a bad note with that Kayla stuff. If we're going to, I mean, we can't just kind of pretend that that didn't happen. That was really bad. But since then, we've kind of, you know, nicer Nelly T.
Should we talk about the elimination? Because
yeah,
this is our second not tying elimination of the season. We had a bunch of cars there and you had...
Well, we had 2 cars there.
But. Yeah, 2 cars there. And our competitors had ropes tied to them and basically they had 20 minutes to tie as many knots throughout the cars as they could. At which point they had to switch and then untie the knots that their competitor tied. And Kyle is shockingly good at it. And he, Billy, as you said, big one-liner episode. My favorite one-liner of the night. He was like, I was built for this. Finally, being a snake has paid off because I've been able to slither through this car. And it's just like great self-awareness. And Kyle, who I actually don't know if he's ever won an elimination before. He's been on these seasons and his political game has sort of been to float and not go into elimination. Came out and destroyed Josh. Instagram update alert, though.
Ooh.
Josh, Instagram story. I'll be back 10 times stronger, 10 times fitter.
Wow.
Now, yeah. The women's side was a little bit closer, and I thought that for the same reasons listed for Kyle, Bailey was going to win by a wide margin just because, you know, the maneuverability factor. But that was closer than we thought it was going to be.
It was way closer. Anissa at the end got, like, essentially unknotted the big knot that Bailey had tied, and it was essentially a race to pull their ropes out of the ring at the end. And Bailey had just amounted, like, slightly too big of a lead and ended up knocking out Anissa. It was actually sad. It was just sad to see Anissa, who's been a part of this franchise for like 20 years at this point, be eliminated right before the final again. And she was sad and TJ was sad. I didn't like it.
Conversation with her mom, I felt like that was foreboding, not great things for Anissa. I loved seeing her mom. I thought their conversation was so fun. And then I was like, but I don't like that I'm seeing this because this probably means that she's eliminated.
TJ had my line of the night, which was not a nice line, if I'm going to be honest.
So mean.
It was a mean move by TJ. TJ went, and obviously he kind of recaps who it is. Is that your TJ impression?
That's my TJ face.
So he kind of says the things like, you know, Bailey, Anissa, great competition. Welcome back to the house, whatever. You beat a warrior. You'd be like a legend, whatever it is that he said. And then he turns to Kyle, and he said, Kyle, you beat a guy who cries a lot, but hey, he's still good.
Really hurt my heart. Josh is like within earshot talking to your producer, and you know he teared up. There were tears welling in his eyes when he heard that.
I love that Josh is in touch with his emotions.
I do too. I like that he's real.
We're a Josh pod. We always will be partially a Josh pod.
Definitely a Josh pod, and I think there's an element of it too where you hear, you know, a lot of athletes a lot of time talk about, oh, I do this for my family, but it doesn't ring fully true. But you know Josh absolutely means that. Like, you see him posting about his family and looking legitimately happy to be back with them in Miami when he is. So when Josh breaks down crying and says, I do this for my family, I believe that.
Should we put a bow on this recap with the one thing from the week that I know that TJ loves?
Please do.
Ominous cliffhangers.
Ooh.
He loved being able to walk out in front of those guys and be like, I'll see you soon.
See you soon.
And walk off. Loves him as much as Pyro and Tanks.
Wow.
Yes.
Should we talk to The Miz?
Let's do it.
In the grand history of ESPN's number one challenge podcast, every time we come on, we do a big sales job for every guest. We tell you it's the biggest guest we've had thus far. This might actually be truthful this time around because our next guest, he's a WWE superstar. He is the host of USA Network's Cannonball. But most importantly, he is a 2-time champion of MTV's The Challenge. We're joined now by Mike The Miz Mizanin. So,
I forgot star of Miz and Mrs. on the USA Network as well, my own reality show. So I went from the real world which was Buna Murray's show on MTV. I went from The Challenge, doing those reality stuff, to my own reality show, and you forgot that. Unbelievable.
I that was a terrible omission.
And by the way, you could have at least said, like, you know, not just WWE superstar, but like, you know, former WWE champion, Intercontinental champion, United States champion, tag team champion, Mr. Money in the Bank, the most must-see WWE superstar of all time. You could have done all of that stuff.
The only rings that count here, the only rings that count here are challenge championships. Which you have two of them.
So talented challenge.
Well, so let's just start right there. What are some of the, like, the fondest memories you have of being on the challenge?
I flew a plane. So on the challenge, the gauntlet, I remember them saying you have to wake up in the morning. And by the way, anytime challenges have to start in the morning, nobody's happy. Because honestly, the challenge when I was on it was just one big party house. And literally everyone just has fun the entire time. And it's like a vacation where you get to do these cool challenges. So to be up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, we had to drive to learn how to fly a plane. And I'll never forget, because I passed out in the middle of learning how to fly a plane because I sat in the back. And then I woke up and they were like, all right, does everyone know what they're doing? And I'm like, yeah, I know what I'm doing. So the object is, there's two planes in the air. One challenge person is in this plane, the other is in this thing. And it's set up like Top Gun, you know, like Iceman and Maverick. So you got two kind of people in the thing. And the guy is actually lifting you off, but then he lets go. And you just have this kind of middle stick where you have to go back and over, back and over. And the object is to get the person in this little window. And you go guns, 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 guns. And if you get that person in the window for five guns, you win. So we go up there. And by the way, they said the number one thing that can happen is you stall out. Excuse me? You stall out? Like, as in the motor just goes, yeah, you'll stall out and then we'll turn it back on. I go, wait a second. What happens when you stall out? And they go, weren't you paying attention? I go, no, I was sleeping. What happens? And by the way, I'm up in the air. It's because we're like BSing. Like, you fly up. And you're not really filming, so I'm just BSing with the guy that's actually flying the plane until he lets me go. And so he's guiding me. He's like, all right, you know what to do. I'm like, can you guide me again on what to do? And he's like, all right, you push back and you push over. And I go, what's the best way to get behind him? Because the object is, if you guys are circling, you know, you guys are on opposite sides, and the object is to get behind the person. So you're circling and you're on opposite sides. And then once you're behind the person, that's when you can go guns, 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 guns. So you press back and you push over on the lever. So I'm doing that, right? And you can feel the motor start stalling. And luckily I didn't stall, but the person I was going up against did, and I gunned him down. And so I ended up winning in that challenge. But that was the coolest thing ever. He literally goes, all right, you're flying. And I go, what? I'm flying. And you could feel him let go. And you're like, oh my God, this is a lot different than I thought it was going to be. And then you can actually feel it start to stall. And he's like, all right, let go, let go. I'm letting go. I'm letting go. And you turn it to the left. And it was craziness. So that, honestly, the gauntlet was probably the hardest challenges, I would say, that I was ever involved with. You know, that's where they really started honing in and making them very, very difficult. And you had, like, you know, where you had to go into the gauntlet. I believe that was the first time they ever had it, because I was on Battle of the Seasons. And then the gauntlet. Yeah, the gauntlet was the first time we actually had, like, these things where you vote people in. And whoever loses in that challenge would have to leave. I actually got voted in once, but I actually volunteered. Because I was like, yeah, I'll volunteer. I'll go in. I kind of did that. It was real stupid. But I always wanted to kind of prove myself, even though I was one of – I'm not going to pat myself on the back. But, yes, I was one of the best challengers ever. And so – especially at that time. And so, like, no one could stop me. And then going in there, I went against Abram, who was, like, a force to be reckoned with. And I took him out. And then everyone was celebrating. It was amazing. We ended up losing that one. But we made decent money off of it because – you make like $10,000 per challenge for your team, and then you separate it at the end. And so you made good money. The Battle of the Seasons was cool because I was just off the Real World, and it was the first time they did the big, like now today you're used to all these people being in these challenges. It was never like that before. They were on a bus when it first started, and they would go, there'd be like 13 of them. This is the first time that they actually put us in a, like, Cabo San Lucas and Battle of Seasons, and literally it was two people from every single season of the challenge. So these were all the people that I watched, you know, growing up. I was like, oh my God. And I was like the latest challenge. So all these people were friends, and I was like, I've just met them. I'm like, oh my God. It's like this person and this person and this person. It was so cool to be on that challenge, and you won a ton of prizes, and it was just fun. Like, I loved being on the challenge.
Do you think you could just jump back in today after the gap and still dominate these kids?
Yes. Reason being is I'm still in shape. Like, WWE has kept me in shape. I think I'm smarter than I was back then. Like, back then I was just stupid. And I know how to play the game. Like, I've been around the game for so long that you have to know how to play the game. Like, there's a reason why there's always the same people in the finals and the people that make it. It's not because they form alliances or it's because of this kind of thing. It's because they know how to play the game and get to where they need to go and make people believe in a certain way. And honestly, like, it's not about lying or deceiving people. It's about getting what you want and where you need to go and what your team needs to be to make it in the end to win the finals. For instance, I'll give you an example. The best game I think that I played was Inferno 2. And the reason being is we had them basically take out our entire team. Now, we may have been losing all these challenges, but I knew at the final challenge, that's where the money is going to be. And we had four people. They had like 10. So I only had three other people that could hold us back. And honestly, our team was so stacked with strong players, we eliminated all the weak links. So we didn't have to carry anybody. We were just doing it on our own. Meanwhile, on the other team, they had to like carry people because they're out of shape or whatever. They were too busy partying while instead of like actually running and getting themselves in shape for the final. Because you know the final is going to be absolutely terrifying and difficult. And so you just have to like figure out who you want in the end with you and how to get everyone that you don't want with you out.
One of the classic moments in challenge history, Miz, that you were somewhat a part of but not a main focus on was in a season where you actually hosted in Champs versus Stars. And you were kind of in the background when there was a heated debate, let's just say, between TO and CT.
That was real. And that was like a real, like, you know, sometimes I feel like nowadays people are hip to what goes on. So they try to create storylines and they try to create, hey, let's fight this way. Let's do this. Hey, if we do this, then we'll get more television time. And it's like they're hip to the business. When I was on the show, there wasn't really any of that. We weren't hip to it because the game changed so much. I believe like after I left, that's when it started. People started getting hip to the fact of if you have a relationship, you're going to get more TV time. If you create drama, it's going to be more TV time. When I went and hosted the show, that was one of the realest moments I had seen on a challenge in a long time because, you know, T.O. came in with like, you know, I like T.O. I know T.O. Not well, but he goes to my gym. So I feel like I know him before I knew him on the challenge. So, you know, T.O. has an aura about him. And I was always trying to figure out, like, why T.O. went to so many different teams. Because this guy is an elite athlete. He is one of the greatest wide receivers in the history of football. There is no doubt. His stats say it. And I was always trying to figure out, why would a team want to get rid of a person that is so talented at wide receiver when you need a wide receiver like that? And it wasn't until I was on Champs versus Stars that I figured out why. T.O. has such an aura, and I'm not even sure he knows what kind of aura he presents when he comes into a room. He has the ability, if he's in a good mood, to raise up the entire room and make them believe in anything they can believe in just by being there. Hmm. He also has the ability, if he's in a bad mood, to absolutely ruin a room. And one of the days, he came in and he wasn't in the best of moods. And his aura is just so strong. You can feel it. Like, you can just it's hard to explain, and I don't know if people have felt this type of aura from a person. Imagine a person in a bad mood, and they walk in, and it's like you guys are all happy and having fun. Like, say we're on this podcast, and one of us is just like, yeah, whatever. It kind of, you're trying to fight for that energy. You're trying to get that energy back. And that's what kind of happened. And T.O. just wasn't in the mood, you know? Like, I don't think the production was exactly the way he wanted it to be. And so CT came out and just, they went at it. And T.O., you know, T.O.'s not going to back down. And CT's not going to back down. Honestly, CT was a huge fan of T.O. Like, we all were. I still am. Like, I love T.O., the personality. I love T.O., the athlete. But now I get it. Now I understand. Like, I understand why T.O. could be traded. Because if he's in a bad mood and it's a Sunday and you're in the playoffs and he's in a bad mood, that aura is just so powerful that it's going to drain down the whole team. And it could. But if he's in a mood where he's going to dominate with a broken leg, guess what? He's going to do it. So that's just the type. Are you willing to risk that type of personality? And I guess some teams weren't. I mean, maybe there was other stuff, but from what I saw and what I experienced, I was like, oh, this could be why. But yeah, that was a real moment. CT went after him, and T.O. wasn't having it. T.O. was done after that. He was like, all right, this is what this is like. I didn't sign up for this. I'm not into the drama. And honestly, like, coming into Champs versus Stars, either you know the game or you don't. And the champs know the game. That's why we changed it up the next season. We had two seasons of Champs versus Stars. And we changed it up from the first season to the second season because the champs know the game. And they'll roll over. Like, new people in the game, they are at a loss. Because if you are not good at challenges, you're out of there. And you got to be able to play the game.
In terms of sort of big personalities, I think something that's been really cool for viewers and fans, I mean, we kind of watched you in the real world, whether you developed or were just making famous, this personality, which I feel like lots of people have friends who have sort of alter egos and things, but you really manifested that into a brand and a career within WWE and all that. So when do you feel like you kind of pivoted from Mike from Real World or The Challenge to The Miz from WWE? Because I think you've done such a great job of not being just tied to what your sort of origin in reality TV was.
That's actually a really good question, because when I got off The Real World, all people wanted was The Miz. And if you remember, when I was on The Real World, there was only one episode with The Miz in it. That was it. Like, and then there was a couple segments here and there. But after that episode, like, reality was so big back then. Now, there's so much reality on television. Back then, it was like The Real World, Survivor, Big Brother, and like there was like four or five. That's it. Now every station has them. So people were watching. If you wanted reality, you're watching The Real World. And once, you know, The Miz came out, I was like, wow, I can't believe the reaction. Like, I was no longer Mike from The Real World. I was The Miz. And I remember going back to my room in Parma, Ohio, in my dad's condo, and asking myself, looking myself in the mirror and seeing on the desk a picture, like a action figure of The Rock, and asking myself, like, what do you want to do with your life? Like, and I literally was looking at myself going, what do you want to do? Do you want to go back to Miami, Ohio and finish college? Or do you want to pursue your dreams? And MTV made me realize, The Real World made me realize, getting on that show, that I could have a dream and I could fulfill it. I wanted to be on The Real World. 60,000 people at the time tried out. Only 7 make it. And I was one of the people. Like, MTV, Buna Murray had that much faith in me to select me out of so many others to put me on that show. And I'm so thankful. That's why you always see me going back hosting, you know, reunions. Because I always feel in debt to MTV, to Buna Murray, for giving me my start and seeing the light that I could shine. And so from there, I set out to become a WWE superstar. I said, I'm going to be a WWE superstar. Everyone told me it's not going to happen. There's no way. I'm not 6'7", 300 pounds of pure solid muscle. And back then, that's all that was on the television for WWE. So I said, screw it. I'm going to move to Los Angeles, move there, went into independent wrestling school. And then not only that, I got acting school, improv school. I was doing, like, when we were on The Real World, you would do these, like, colleges would have you come out to like do motivational speeches to their students, because real world was so much like college. So I would have public speaking, ways to, you know, form the Miz and kind of derive it from there. So I've always been a person that I want more. I always want more. So once I fulfill one goal, what's the next goal? So then I got on Tough Enough, which was a reality show. I didn't win Tough Enough. I could win a WWE contract. Didn't win, but I pressed the exec so much that WWE gave me a developmental contract. Moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and started training there. Then I moved. Then 6 months later, they wanted me to move their other developmental territory, OVW, so moved there. And then finally, a year later, I was on WWE TV. And once you're on WWE TV, what do you want to do next? You want to win the WWE Championship. 5 years later, I won the WWE Championship. All right, now what do you want to do? Now I want it all. I want to figure out what else I could do. So then I started doing movies. I did the Marine 3, 4, 5, and 6. The first time any Marine, obviously John Cena was the first. The second was Ted DiBiase. I was the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth. And they liked my way of going about doing the movie so much that they gave me more and more and more movies. I did Santa's Little Helper, Christmas Bounty, if anyone wants to watch any of those. They're absolutely amazing Christmas. And then Main Events right now on Netflix that you can watch, a movie that I did. And, you know, MTV came coming back with the challenges, and they kept asking me if I wanted to do them. And I said, look, I don't have the time. Like, I wish I did. Mm. I love the challenges. But I told everyone I retired after Inferno 2. And they kept asking me back. And I said, I told you I retired. I told you I retired. And then they said, hey, would you host a reunion? And then I hosted it. I said, absolutely. So I hosted a reunion show. And from the reunion shows, they said, would you host Champs vs. Stars? So I did that. And now USA has come to me and said, hey, we saw you in Champs vs. Stars. We love you on Miz and Mrs., which is my own reality show. And we, you know, obviously WWE, The Miz, we love you on there. Would you want to do Cannonball? And I was like, I saw the deck. I saw the challenges. I saw the opportunity to see contestants from every walk of life, every shape, every size, you know, come in there, whether they're an athlete or not. Go in. Sometimes if you're not even an athlete, you still can succeed in Cannonball. And that's what I loved about this show so much. It's a competition series. I love competition. I love to laugh. I love to be entertained. This was the perfect show for me.
So Cannonball, as you mentioned, premieres on the USA Network July 9th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central. One thing that I wanted to ask you. So I watched the preview episode. It was on NBC a couple nights ago. When you're there seeing that there's like a 7-story slide that you could just launch yourself off of, is there any part of you that's tempted to do it? Or you're like, you know what? I'm the Miz now. I have Miz and Mrs. I have Miz TV. I have to host this show. I cannot risk injuring myself to go down a slide.
No, I don't think like that. You not know me? Did you not watch MTV's The Challenge ever? Like, if there is a competition, if there is a challenge, I want to do it and succeed at it. And so every day I would walk into the set and I would go, today's the day, I'm doing it. And I'd be on my headsets and they'd be like, you can't. You know you can't for insurance purposes. I'd allow you to do it. So the last day, right? Me and Roxy and Simon are all walking up. Simon's scared of heights. He does not want to do it. And by the way, it's 10 stories high, 100 feet, and we are going up the slide and to do like a photo shoot, right? And it's the last day. So we get up there. We do our photo shoot. Roxy and I look at each other. We look at the slide, and I say, are you ready? She goes, yeah. And I go, and she goes, are you ready? I go, yeah. So as we're about to literally run and do it, they turn off the water because they hear us on the mic. Talking about doing it. And obviously you can't go down a dry slide, especially 100 feet, because you're going to get chafed really bad. So I was never allowed to do any of the challenges. They wouldn't allow it. They forbid us to do it. Roxy and I wanted to. Simon Gibson did not.
Season two. You got
season
this.
Two, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like once you fly the plane, the slide is it's
nothing.
You know, small potatoes.
Yeah, nothing. I'll tell you what, doing the challenges on MTV was one of the best things that I've ever done. Like, I got the skydive, bungee cord jump, fly a plane, do these competitions. Like, I remember this was the most disgusting challenge that I ever been in, and it looks cool, right? So there was this huge sundae. And I'm not talking like, oh, banana sit from Dairy Queen. No, not a banana split. I'm talking, think of the biggest mountain of ice cream. And you had your hands tied behind your back and everyone had to stand in a line and eat the ice cream. Now, this day and age could never happen. Never. But back then, this was the most disgusting. Like, I've eaten roaches. Like, I've eaten all the disgusting things. Wasabi, like, three rolls of wasabi. Like, I've done it all. This was the most disgusting. The reason being is, like, back in the day, medical, it didn't care. So it'd be like people had a cold, like your nose is running and your mouth is on it. Your nose is on it. And then you have to go next and you're in a competition. So you're literally eating like snot, ice cream, spit, like everything. It was so disgusting. But like watching it back, like it was the most fun. Like it was so much fun. Like imagine being a 20 something going to an exotic location. And literally, like, you can create drama or you can be in the drama. I was the person that I would always be like, hey, this person's talking about you. Hey, this person's talking about you. And then literally just watch them fight. And it was just the most entertaining. Just get your popcorn and go.
Miz, you were amazing to come on with us. Cannonball premieres July 9th, 8, 7 Central on USA Network. We've got Miz and Mrs. We've got to promote that as well.
Coming out this fall, new episodes. Definitely look out for it. And you have WWE on Fox each and every Friday. If you want to be entertained, that's the show. Those are the shows for you.
And two-time challenge champ. So now we can say this is the biggest guest in ESPN's number one challenge podcast history. Thanks so much, Miz.
Thank you guys very much. Appreciate it. It's been awesome.
All right. Thank you to The Miz for joining us. It was a really enjoyable chat about lots of challenge nostalgia. We're joined now by our unofficial ESPN's number one challenge podcast statistician and a happy Canada Day to him, Ryan Brotman. Ryan, take it away.
Thank you very much. So we're going to continue with The Miz theme this week. Last week was a little complicated on the stats front, so we're going to take it down a notch this week and go for two kind of easier to understand stats. So there's two things that we were looking at. I wanted to find the things that The Miz really excelled in the challenge. And there's two things, the daily challenge wins per season and the amount of times that he made it to the finals or won per season. So I wanted to look at how well he was able to do compared to others in making it all the way to the end without being eliminated. So for that second one there that I mentioned, the finals or wins per season, The Miz, in four out of his five seasons, was able to make it. So at an 80% clip, made it all the way to the end. Now that might sound like no one could possibly beat that number, but there's one person who was able to do that. And that was Kenny, who in seven of eight seasons, so 88%, was able to make it all the way to the end.
Wow.
There were a couple others that were pretty close. We had Landon and Theo that in three of their four seasons were able to make it to the end. So it's a lot of the older competitors that maybe was a little bit easier in the challenge back in the day. Maybe it's a little tougher to make it all the way to the end now, but still impressive for four out of five making it all the way to the end. The other one I looked at, the daily challenge wins per season. So Miz, over his five seasons, won a total of 29 daily challenges for 5.8 per season, which sounds like a lot. But two of the guys that I mentioned in the other one were a little better than him even. We have Landon that had six wins per season, and then Theo, easily the best, was at seven wins per season. So the Miz, dominant in the time that he was there, rarely got eliminated, won a lot. And I was looking at some top 10 lists of best challengers ever. He often seems to be excluded from it. And I think The Miz is pretty underrated as one of the challenge greats of all time. So that's stat of the week. Just a couple things to look at with how great he was.
Were there any challengers from, if you want to call it the modern era of the challenge, that were anywhere close to some of those numbers that you just ran us through?
So Jordan is up there. I think he's made it to the final or won five of eight seasons, which is pretty good.
Wow, okay.
But there's no one in the new seasons that really comes close to the other guys that I mentioned. For example, Johnny, who's won 60 challenges, has been around for 20 seasons. So he's only at about half as good as The Miz in terms of daily challenges.
I wonder if a big part of that, too, is that there used to be payouts for daily challenges. So you'd get the big dogs competing every single week because that was where they got some of their money for the season.
And also, right. I feel like he got out while he was young. And we know Ryan's stat about that magical age of turning 31. So he got in, got out, and his numbers stayed great.
It's like Ted Williams. I don't even know if that's an accurate comparison at all. No, maybe not. I'm getting a lot of weird looks. Okay, he's not like Ted Williams. Anyway, Ryan, thank you for that great stat. Nice and simple. Billy, how'd you feel about the numbers this week?
I'm good, man. I brought a pen and paper today. I was writing things down. I was keeping track of what was going on. I'm not confused, I don't think.
I think we're back on track. That was great stuff. Well, Ryan, thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Great. Thanks, guys.
So speaking of stats, I just looked it up. Ted Williams played from 1939 to 1960.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what I was doing there. That was a really bad reference. I was thinking of Barry Sanders, and I don't know why I just didn't say Barry Sanders. That was very dumb of me. I'm sorry.
Safe to say you lost your head?
Oh, no.
Oh, that is okay. We don't need to spend any more time on that. Let's just go right to Eliz for the recipe of the week.
I'm going to really not have something that's Miz-themed right now, and I'm going to go with a recipe for something that has been big on our group text chain. Air fryer coconut shrimp.
Ooh, let's go.
I heard that was Miz's favorite recipe.
Right. That just got cut out of our interview. That's definitely something he said to us.
If there's one thing that the Miz loves, it's air fryer coconut shrimp.
Okay. So, very easy. In theory, I don't think you need to have an air fryer, but it makes it healthier, and that's how I made it. So, you're going to prepare an assembly line. Got your shrimp, either thawed or fresh, uncooked, raw shrimp. Peeled, deveined, patted dry. Sprinkle it some salt and pepper. And I used about 12 or 16 ounces of shrimp. Small dish of like a third of a cup of flour. And then your next bowl is going to be two eggs whisked. So like scrambled eggs before you make them. And then a plate or a bowl of 2/3 a cup each of sweetened shredded coconut and plain panko breadcrumbs and mix them together so it's all evenly dispersed. So you're going to take each shrimp and you're going to coat it in a little bit of flour, dip it in the eggs, press it on both sides into the coconut and panko mixture, and keep going till all of your shrimp have gone through every step of the assembly line. You're going to spray your air fryer basket. Mine is set up more like an oven, so I just put it on the racks. And I cooked it at 420 for about 15 minutes until it was golden brown. And let me tell you, it looked even better than takeout. So crispy. You could eat it plain, dip it in like sweet chili sauce or duck sauce, maybe make a lime crema. Go ketchup if you want. It was just, possibilities are endless. It was so good. Even made great leftovers. I was really happy with this recipe.
That sounds so good. I love coconut shrimp.
To be honest, I don't know if this is an embarrassing admission or not. I don't even know how an air fryer works. What does it even look like?
It's convection either. They're amazing.
It's so cool because it circulates really hot air. This isn't like scientific. I don't actually know. But so you don't have to cook it with any fat or oil or anything, but it still gets super crispy.
Hey, if you understand the science of air fryers and you want to tweet at us, #NeedTheFeed, we'll do something with that. Not sure what we're going to do
yet. Most of them have a basket, but mine has racks because it's also a dehydrator and a rotisserie and something else.
Ooh, what have you dehydrated?
I tried to dehydrate mango. It was the first thing I used the appliance for like 3 years ago, and it didn't really work. It didn't get dry enough. And so then I put it away and didn't use it for 3 years. And during quarantine, I decided to become an air frying machine. And I've been very happy with the air fryer function.
There you go.
Side note, mangoes are very difficult to cut.
Yeah. Have you seen the thing where you like, cut a slit and then you slide it down the side of a glass?
Oh, I have not.
Well, I feel like this episode's winding down. We got the recipe. We're about to get to final thoughts. I'm wondering though, before we get there, not to, you know, take us down a different path, but is that yet another Catamount shirt that you're wearing today, Chunky
Dog? It is yet another Catamount shirt. And this Catamount is standing on an outline of the state of North Carolina. So thank you. Once again, Western Carolina University for being an amazing host. It's beautiful here. Everyone, come visit Cullowhee, North Carolina.
Eliz, final thoughts?
Work hard, be kind, go Catamounts with an asterisk that when I say it, I'm talking about the University of Vermont.
Oh, boo.